This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm here at the National Astronomical Meeting in London, and I have with me Professor Gianfranco Bertone from the University of Zurich and Institut d'Astrophysique de Paris, who just talked to us about dark matter search. So what can you tell us about dark matter? What is dark matter?
I wish I knew. We know that there is some form of matter that is very different from the matter we know in the universe. And we have evidence for it. A lot of different pieces of evidence, actually. They come from the observation of galaxies, the observations of clusters, and the observation of the cosmic microwave background.
What's the cosmic microwave background?
Cosmic microwave background is a sort of a relic radiation that was left after the Big Bang. And by studying it, actually by studying the anisotropies in this cosmic microwave background, we can figure out things like the abundance of the ordinary matter, so everything that makes planets, people, stars, and everything else, and the abundance of dark matter, which is something completely different. We know that it cannot be made of standard matter, but we do not know of what it is made. So we have some ideas about it, and we are trying to test it, these ideas in accelerators and with these direct and indirect searches.
Okay, so what do we know about the dark matter?
So we know, for instance, how much dark matter there is on average in the universe, and even locally. We have estimates of what is the quantity of dark matter that is streaming through us as we speak, for instance. And we know also that the interactions of this dark matter with us is very small. And, you know, an obvious way of seeing this is that we do not perceive it, not even with our most sophisticated experiments.
How do we know all this? What was there, like, experiments? Was there observations for that?
So the first evidence for dark matter was found by this Swiss astronomer who was working back then at Caltech in the U.S., and he realized that he was observing what they were called back then the nebulae in the Coma cluster, which is a cluster of galaxies. So he was observing these galaxies, and he estimated by looking at the motion and the distribution of velocities of these galaxies, he estimated how much mass was in the cluster. Then he compared this estimate of the mass with the galaxy he was observing with the telescope, and he realized that there was a mismatch of a factor of 10. So back then, you know, observations were not particularly good. This guy was a bit, not necessarily the most mainstream guy in science. So this was left there for actually many years. And, a big change happened in a paradigm shift actually happened in the late 70s after people like Vera Rubin and many others started studying the rotation curves of galaxies.
What's a rotation curve?
Right, so the rotation curve tells you how fast the stars and the gas move around in a galaxy as a function of their distance from the center. Okay, so you make a prediction for this, how this rotation curve should look like in standard Newtonian gravity, general relativity. And what you find is that instead of decaying this rotation curve, as you would expect from Newtonian dynamics, these rotation curves actually remain very flat down out to the outer parts of these galaxies, which was immediately interpreted as the evidence for a new component of matter, which was contributing to the mass at that large distance from the center of the galaxy. So by the end of the 70s, there's actually a review paper in 1978, that starts by saying there is an increasing number of reasons that make us believe that the mass of galaxies has been underestimated by a factor of 10. OK, Okay, so this was a major breakthrough in astrophysics. However, I mean, it's already 30 years after that, and we still don't have a clue about the nature of the dark matter.
I guess that's why it's called dark.
Absolutely.
So you were talking about direct and indirect ways of detecting the dark matter. Can you give us some example of what an indirect way and what a direct way would be?
Sure. So let's start from direct detection, which is the most simple thing to explain, which is so the idea is you build a big detector, and in practice you wait for one of these particles that are streaming through us and through the detector to interact with one of the nuclei in the detector. Okay.
Is it like the neutrino detectors?
It's almost, yeah, in a way it is similar to the neutrino detectors. And what you actually have to do is to go deep underground, because there are many particles that interact with the nuclei in your detector, which are typically cosmic rays that penetrate in your detector and deposit energy there. So that's why it's called direct detection, because you just directly measure energy deposited by these dark matter particles.
Okay.
And then indirect detection, since you asked, is a bit different. So we know some of the properties of these dark matter particles. We know, for instance, that at least in a class of model, which is called weakly interacting massive particles, or in short, WIMPs.
Love that name.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was a good name, but anyway. This class of models, actually, these particles are expected to annihilate with each other. So essentially, they collide with each other, to say it in simple terms, and they produce particles of a different type. Okay, so they convert in energy, and then they produce new particles. So what we hope to do is to look for the annihilation products of these dark matter particles. So, you know, we are living in a galaxy, the Milky Way. At the center of the Milky Way, we know that there is a big concentration of dark matter. And the idea is to look with gamma ray telescopes or neutrino telescopes in that direction and see whether there is an excess of this annihilation radiation. And this is what we are currently doing using data from the Fermi satellite, which is a gamma ray satellite, and Air Cherenkov telescopes like HASS in Namibia and Veritas in the US and MAGIC in the Canary Islands. And neutrino telescopes and many other things, actually.
Okay. You also mentioned the LHC in your talk. Why are you using it for looking for dark matter, too?
Right. So one of the reasons why particle physicists got interested in the dark matter problem is that there is a very intriguing coincidence, I would call it, which is that particle physicists were investigating ways to extend the standard model of particle physics. And they came up with theories like supersymmetry, for instance.
What is supersymmetry?
Right. Supersymmetry is a new symmetry of the standard model. There are many symmetries in the standard model. And it is possible that if supersymmetry exists, it associates particles, supersymmetric particles, or supersymmetric partners, as they are called, to every particle of the standard model. Okay? So what happens is that at the LHC, you may, for instance, produce, by smashing together a proton and an antiproton in these beams at very high energy, you may hope to produce things like supersymmetric quarks, supersymmetric partners of the quarks, or squarks in the supersymmetric jargon. It's not nice, but it's still better than WIMPs, probably. So what you can do is to follow the decay of these new particles that you have produced. And among the debris of this decay chain, there would be the so-called neutralinos, which are the partners of other particles of the standard model, which are called the gauge bosons. Okay? So if you produce them, actually you can measure the energy that is carried away by these particles. And it turns out that these neutralinos, so neutralinos are being discovered and discussed in a context which is completely different from dark matter. But the interesting thing is that in many of these theories, you can, the abundance of these neutralinos in the universe can exactly match the abundance of dark matter required. I mean, neutralinos would be perfect dark matter candidates. So if we could discover these new particles, and if we could prove that they make, 23% of the universe, I mean, we could claim to have discovered the dark matter.
But isn't that a bit odd to have something that makes up, as you said, 23% of the universe? It's a huge number, and really having no idea what it is. Do you think just one particle would be enough, or could it be like a family of particles or several different things?
Okay, so this is one of, very interesting possibility. There are many people who say that, imagine you were living in the dark side of the universe, which is made of dark matter, for instance, and you discovered that there is a 5% of the energy budget and matter and energy budget of the universe, which is made of these, strange baryons, as they would call them. If they made the hypothesis that we were just only one particle making planets and people and whatever, of course it would be completely wrong. So there are people who are saying that a similar situation might be happening here, and that there is an entire dark sector rather than a dark matter particle. However, in these theories that we are studying, there is a single dark matter particle, and the key point there is that all the particles of the standard of this new theory are unstable, in the sense they can decay into something lighter than them. The neutralino is the lightest particle of the new theory.
It would be like the equivalent of our neutrino, I guess.
Not exactly, because there are also supersymmetric partners of the neutrino that are called sneutrinos. So this is still different. But the idea was more or less the same. Particles which are neutral and interact feebly with ordinary matter. So in general, it is possible that the dark sector is more complicated than being only one particle. In practice, most of the theories that we are studying currently usually end up with the prediction of only one particle, which is made stable by some specific symmetry of the theory.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
It was a very good talk.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.